Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. And it's really a treat for me to interview a lot of people, especially like my own personal guitar heroes, one of which I have on the show today. And it's always really strange because, when I listen to music, it means a great deal to me. And when there are certain bands I listen to over and over and over again, because it's just a good vibe and, just makes me feel wonderful. You know, like when I'm in the gym, when I'm driving in the car, it's like the soundtrack to my life, sort of, you know. And I'm with Thomas Jr. Anderson today, and he's one of those guys who's been part of the soundtrack to my life for, you know, at least 10 years. Thomas is one of the founding members and the sole guitar player for the band Kamchatka. They're out of Sweden. They are a really fucking fantastic rock band, very heavy blues and psychedelic influences, and the guitar plays a real prominent role in their songs. The songs have great melodies. You know, it's not the same old rock songs you've heard over and over again. And even though the band is definitely firmly rooted in blues rock psychedelia, they have a very progressive feel to the songs. The average song length is long, around 5 minutes. Some album cuts are as long as 8 minutes. Engineering and mastering on all these records is honestly first class. And it's a real honor and privilege to have Thomas Jr. Anderson on the show today. Thanks, man. Appreciate your time.
I appreciate it, Craig. Hi.
So, when we were younger, you know, you had rock music, and then maybe you had psychedelic rock, and then Zeppelin came along and you kind of had hard rock. And today it seems like everybody has a category, you know, and I was curious what your, how do you classify Kamchatka?
Yeah.
And I hate to even ask that. I'm just like, it's like, yeah. It's bizarre.
No, I don't know. I look at it as, it's very rooted, as you say, in the blues music. That's that foundation. But I mean, it's a rock band, I guess. At the end of the day, but
it's a fucking rock band for sure, man.
Yeah, but there is so many influences. I mean, Per Wiberg, who plays the bass in the band, he used to play keyboards in a band called Opeth, metal band from Sweden, and. Toby, the drummer, he grew up listening to Iron Maiden from the UK, and I play the blues since I was seven. So I mean, it's a mixture of a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, I think they classify you. I've seen a lot of bands in stoner rock, and to me, that's kind of it's just like psychedelic blues rock. I don't know where there are some bands that like. Totally, you know, they're all about smoking weed and stuff like that. You guys are remote, you know. I don't get that vibe off you guys at all.
No, but I think it comes from because we played a lot with Clutch from Maryland.
Okay.
So and I guess they are regarded as a stoner,
punk stoner
band. Right. Yeah, they are from that. So we got connected. We toured with them in 2008 through the States in the East Coast. And you know how it is. People like to categorize and have everything sorted so they know what to do. So stoner, blue, psychedelic, melodic, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that works for me, man. Hey, when we first spoke, you mentioned to me that when you first put Kamchatka together, you said to me, I really wanted to give myself 10 years to get this project up and running the way you wanted. And like you indicated that you knew you were going to have to make a lot of sacrifices in your life outside the band to get what you wanted to accomplish out of the band. And, you know, first of all, I wanted to tell you, I really respect that kind of a vision and a willingness to look at something long term. I think that takes a lot of discipline, not to mention the actual discipline to go and then do it. You know, a lot of people talk shit and I'm going to do this and this. You actually did it, man. And you've done great. You've done six, I mean, really great albums. And as back then, if you could remember, what were you thinking about as you said, hey, I'm going to give 10 years. I want to do this.
Well, considering that there was no music scene, no live scene in my hometown, especially not for blues rock or something like that. So the only way to do something for me and for the band was to go to the rehearsal studio 5 days a week for 10 years and write music, invite friends to the rehearsal studio, come over, have a couple of beers, listen to us play. We put up our own shows, like no entrance fee or anything, just to play. We just played all the time. And the vision, I knew that we had something going on music wise. When you compare to what you hear on the radio, or if you compare to other recording artists, I knew that we had something, and I just knew that it takes a lot of time, and as you say, discipline. We were like, yeah, we didn't have anything else to do,
yeah,
than practice and play. I used to imagine that our rehearsal room was a small joint down in Austin. I used to imagine that, and we just played and played. And I mean, it's the hours that makes the that makes you be able to play good.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times people disregard that. They just see a band. Like if someone came and saw you perform today, or if someone listened to the latest record, Long Road Made of Gold, they're more likely to say, wow, these guys just came up out of nowhere. But nobody realizes the journey of, you know, I'm sure it was freezing in the middle of the winter in Sweden. You're out there in the fucking rehearsal room banging it out for a few hours.
Yeah. I also used to go there when during the night, because our rehearsal studio was in the harbor in Sweden, in my hometown in Varberg, and they had there is a big export. They export a lot of wood to the U.S. as well, and they had a big garage for forklifts and everything, the big machines. I used to put my amplifier in there middle of the night when I couldn't sleep. So just playing guitar.
So you just logged your hours in.
Yeah.
So now here you are 13 years and six really great albums later, and I was curious if you feel that you've accomplished what you set out to do.
Yeah, I mean, the goal was... My only dream at that time was to record one album with our own songs, and that would be it, just to hear ourselves play in the record player, in the CD player at the time. And but we just kept going. I don't know where we got the energy from. I think when we started to tour with back in 2007, we did three shows with Clutch here in Sweden, in the capital, Stockholm, and in the next biggest town, Gothenburg, and the third biggest town, Malmö. So that in 2007, and that was like, we got to compare ourselves, what we had done together, and we noticed that people really liked what they heard. And then the guys in Clutch, they really enjoyed and later on invited us to the States in 2008. So when we started to tour and we could play bigger venues, we got new energy. So then it was much easier when we had people that listened to what we did instead of ourselves. Yeah. Yeah.
No, sorry about that.
No, as a blues guitar player, I mean, coming to Dallas and all those cities down in the South where I listened to, when I listened to Johnny Winter and all those great cats, of course, that was a big thing for me personally to do what I wanted to do since I was 7 years old. I mean, I used to talk in the mirror after every day I practiced. And then in the mirror, I saw Eric Clapton, but it was me. But I thought it was him. And I mean, we played Hideaway all over again from the Eric Clapton and John Mayall's album from 1966. And I was a little kid, you know, and talking to myself, "Hey, Eric, what do you think about that? How did I do?" And I could talk to him just by imagination, and to go down to play the stages that I've listened to, I mean, Fabulous Thunderbirds and all the cats at the House of Blues. I mean, that was fuel, and that people we sold 700 CDs on that first month as an unknown band. I think it was that was I had made it. I thought back then in 2008. So. Now it's just it keeps on going. You set new goals all the time. Yeah. I think we are like that as human beings. We always have to strive for something.
Yeah. Your English is great, man. I'm just sitting here saying, how the hell does he speak such good English? You'd never know. English is a second language of yours, to be honest with you.
We had that in school, so.
Yeah, well, it's right on. So the first, you were always the lead guitarist, but the first four albums, I think you had another band member sharing singing duties with you, yes?
Yeah, correct. That was Roger Öjersson. He's a guitar player by heart. I mean, he's the best guitar player that I know of. But he was... He was on the West Coast. He used to live in the capital on the East Coast, but he was in our hometown and he had nothing to do. So in 2001, it was 30 years since Jimi Hendrix passed away. We set out just to do something. We said, okay, let's hammer in 15 Jimi Hendrix songs and do a jubilee?
Yeah, or, like a you know, and like a jubilee, or yeah, it could be a
celebration,
retrospective, yeah, anything like that.
Yeah, so we did that, and he was fine with playing the bass. I mean, he can play anything, so he was fine with that. And then we stuck together for 10 years, and he played bass. But I knew that one day when we grow as Kamchatka, I know that he wants to play the guitar. But I did not want to have two guitar players because I wanted to have the freedom as a power trio for a couple of more years.
Mm. Man, I give you a lot of credit that you had this vision and you stuck to it because you believe, not out of ego, but out of belief.
Yeah. It's not about ego. I can play in all the other bands or jam or hang out with other guitar players. It's not that, but the vision was there. The picture in my head was there.
Yeah, really.
So I had to follow my heart in that.
So it sounds like you do a lot of almost like visualization stuff. Is that something you've done for a long time? Like picturing what something's going to look like and then like literally committing to it where you're having this conversation with yourself and immersing yourself in it as if it is reality?
Yeah, I've always had that. I don't know where that comes from, but I have this clear picture of what I want to do, and then it's just a matter of doing it. Just do it. Anything is possible if you just work hard for it.
Yeah. I think that's great that you've done that. They've actually done studies about how effective that is, you know, visualization and like living it as if it's happened, you know, and I know that's effective. And, you know, the only difference is a lot of people, they stop when it comes time to the doing. And then they say, well, shit, I kept imagining it and it never happened.
No, you have to do the doing as well.
Yeah. You got to, right. It's a little bit of a caveat at the end there. Okay. Yeah. So 6 albums in 13 years. For me personally, I love Volume 3. But honestly, the last two that I listened to are great. But and I listened to all of them in my rotation. The last one, as I said, Long Road Made of Gold, was great. There was some really cool surprises on there, like opens up with a banjo. That was like, I thought that was really cool. That's not what I was expecting from a Kamchatka record.
No, neither did I. But I just, you know, like with visualization, it was kind of the same thing. I just heard a fucking banjo, and I thought that.
Do you play banjo? How many times have you picked up the banjo?
No, I think it was the third time in my life. It wasn't that hard.
That's great, man. It sounded great. What album is your personal favorite, and do you know if there's a fan favorite?
Well, I really do enjoy listening to, if I want to listen to myself, which I rarely do, it would be The Search Goes On, because that album was written totally by myself. Kind of, it was arranged and produced by Per Wiberg, but I wrote the songs. So and the lyrics are very personal on that one as well. So that's my favorite album for me personally. But I love Volume 3, and I think that a lot of people like Volume 3. We had Sean Paul Gaster as a guest on the Whipping Post cover we did. I know that we got a lot of we played Whipping Post a lot when we toured the States with double drums, with Toby and JP on drums.
That's cool.
It was a blast. Yeah, that was a blast. And then there's a song there called Confessions that I know that a lot of people like as well. But it's hard for me to say what other people think. For me, it's a long journey. For me, it's a long album, all of it.
Yeah, it's great, great stuff, man. The last two albums were great, and that was just solo, your voice alone. And I was curious, what were the good and the not so good things about having to sing 100% of everything?
Well, it's not so. It takes a lot of power to sing. And I mean, I've not developed my voice. I've always had the voice, so to speak. I used to sing when I was a kid, but to sing full out, full on, has been a challenge. But I was interested to see if I could take that challenge and to manage it. Roger used to sing. Also, we used to be like 50% each, and then you could rest when you played live, rest for a song or two, and then so. Yeah, it's tough sometimes when I can feel that it can be a little bit too much responsibility on my shoulders sometimes.
Mm. Sure.
Especially when the voice, when you have toured for a couple of weeks and the voice starts to crackle, and you want to do a good performance and you want to sound as good as you possibly can, and so that can be a drag. But I do the best I can, and I try to be a little bit more careful with the voice when we tour.
Well, you say
I don't talk so much when I tour these days.
And you sing in kind of a falsetto, because your speaking voice is much deeper than your singing voice.
No, it's not a falsetto. It's just that that's my singing voice. It's just much brighter, or what do you say?
Yeah,
it's a high. But it's not a falsetto.
It sounds great, man. It really sounds good. I didn't know what to expect, because I wasn't. And I was used to the both of you guys singing, and then it was awesome. The music, you know, it's interesting. The music, now that I think about it, because it was all you, in some strange way, it was a little tighter.
I think so too. In some kind of way, I don't know what way, but in some kind of way, I think it was glued together in my head first.
So I
think it makes the impression that it's a bit tighter, and I think that you are right with that one, and the latest album as well. It's a little bit more in the face,
yeah.
A little bit more tight. Before the first four albums were a little bit more loose, I guess, a little bit more psychedelic and different types of songs, because Roger, he wrote 50% of that music. And so it's a different combination now when Per Wiberg writes, then it's a new combination. I like the both.
Yeah, they're both great. That's what you just said it. These last two records, it's a little less psychedelic and more driving.
Yeah, it's more driving.
Yeah.
And that comes from Per Wiberg, definitely, yeah. Because he is a lot more rock oriented. He's much more like I've always looked up to him. The first time I saw him, he played with a band called Sky High in Sweden. That was in 1987 or something. I was like 14 years old. And I saw this. They opened for Chuck Berry.
Wow. And, yeah. That's pretty cool.
And on the stage, I looked at the guitar player, of course, Klas Yngström. But the coolest guy on that stage was Per Wiberg. And with his long hair and all that. So he is rock and roll for me. He is my, lighthouse in the dark sea. You know?
That's cool. You know, I just thought of something. How far, like, are you from the guys in the Quill?
Now they are from, in the middle of Sweden, I think.
You're asking the wrong guy. I wouldn't know north, south. I wouldn't know up or down if you threw out names.
I'm on the west coast here. You know, you have Gothenburg on the west coast of Sweden, and on the east coast, 500 kilometers to the east side, to the Baltic Sea. There you find Stockholm. I think they are from the Stockholm area, so that would be 500 kilometers.
Which is about, 1,200 miles, I think?
I'm not too good at math.
Yeah, I think it's like at the 1,200. I think a kilometer is 2.2 miles or something like that. So, just curious. Yeah, I don't know how big it was. So it's like from New York to Texas, maybe, or New York to Florida, probably. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Sweden is a very long country. I mean, it's like 230 kilometers long.
Yeah.
So, no, 2,300 kilometers.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's about 3,500 miles. That's across the whole country of the United States. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that big. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's a thin but long country.
Hey, are you working on anything now that you're excited about?
Oh, yeah. I just got the cover artwork for a new album that we will release through Weathermaker Music. It's Clutch's own label. We have a side project, me and Per Wiberg in Kamchatka, and Sean Paul Gaster, drummer in Clutch. We call the band King Hobo, and the album will be released, I guess, in a month.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's like a jamming project, but with real songs at the same time. So there's some blues there, there's some jamming, there's some rock in that too. I really enjoy playing with people like Sean Paul Gaster. He is a big role model for me, as well as Per. So they are feel like big brothers. We came very close, me and JP, over the years touring together, and good friends, good vibes. I have that, and also we're working on a new Kamchatka album. That's cool.
That's really cool.
And I do a lot of Swedish folk music as well, some traditional jazz music. I do that. And then I'm working on a solo project also.
Holy shit, man. You're a busy beaver.
Yeah, I like to stay busy. I know. I mean, after the accident that I had in 2017, it's about I like to have keep it busy. I only have one life. I spent one.
Yeah, man, I hear you.
I look forward to play the guitar, play the acoustic guitar in a like solo project. That'll be cool. That'll
be great. And like I said, doors open. You want to come on here? We'll talk about it. We'll promote it. King Hobo, can you say the name of the album yet, or is it too early?
No, it will be called Mauga. Mauga, I think.
Mauga?
Mauga.
Mauga.
Yeah, Mauga, yeah.
What does that mean?
That is it. It's like it's a bird. In my hometown dialect, I have a very special dialect which only 200 people know about, and that particular bird is called Mauga in my home dialect. So it's very limited knowledge there.
That's kind of cool, man. It's a secret, yeah. Club.
Yeah, it's a secret club. And it actually comes from where we recorded the album here in Sweden, in our rehearsal room in Kamchatka studio. And JP, Sean Paul from Clutch, they were on tour. And when he got off the tour, he flew from Stockholm to Gothenburg, and we picked him up. And we went to a place to eat. So we ate down by the sea, and we had bought sandwiches at Subway.
Subway in Sweden?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's funny. What kind of sandwiches do they have there?
There's all the subs that you have in the States.
Okay, so it's not like kippers or little Swedish fish or anything like that.
No. It's the same thing that you guys have.
Like roast beef and turkey and all that and chicken. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
All that. Yeah. So, but we said to JP when we came down to the sea. By the sea in my hometown, that mind the birds, JP, mind the birds. So, but then it's actually a sea, seagull.
Yeah, sure.
Mauga is the word for seagull in my hometown own language,
gotcha.
which only 200 people in Sweden understand. So, but a seagull. A Mauga came and took JP's Subway.
That was the name of this. That's a great title. A good story behind that, man.
Yeah.
So you speak, how many languages do you speak? You speak English, Swedish, and then this dialect?
Yeah, the dialect is a mixture of Dutch and Danish. So I talk a little bit of Dutch and a little bit of German as well. So.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you said you grew up on the west coast of Sweden. Was it a big city, a town, a small town, or?
No, the fishing village where I come from, and Toby, there were like 200 people there, all based on fishing, the fishing culture and everything. But the town, the town Varberg is like, I think it's 60,000 in the community. And the nearest town is Gothenburg, which holds, I would guess, 500,000.
Okay.
So
60,000 is a like small to medium. Would that be a small to medium sized town in Sweden?
Yeah, medium size.
Medium size. Okay, interesting. What was growing up there like?
Well, I was different. For me, it was different. I was always the I don't know. I'm a social person. It's not that. I had friends, but I had my guitar in my room, and I had listened to the blues, listening to Chuck Berry and all those cats, those first generation of rock and rollers from the States.
Hmm.
All of those greats, Fats Domino on the piano. So I had my own world. But at the same time, I had the normal world, which we all live in, kind of like with friends and school and all that. But it always felt like I lived the normal life as a theater.
Interesting.
And the music world for me was the real world. So it was kind of weird, I guess, sometimes. But I had a good upbringing, nice parents, and my siblings and the family. No bigger. We were raised by our mother because my father was out on sea all the time. He was only back home on Saturdays and Sundays. Then he was out on sea again. So, but that was normal to us.
Sure. Are your parents still around?
Yeah, they are. They are. They are alive and kicking.
Good. Good. Does your dad still work, or is he retired?
Yeah, he's retired, but he's always out at sea anyway. That's his normal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get it, man. Let me ask you this. You know, I think people that play the blues or people that play metal, I think there's a tremendous amount of emotional energy that goes into doing that. And I always find that, and myself included, not that I call myself a guitar player next to you, but those people that do that, it's almost therapy to play. And in some ways, we are all kind of exercising some demons in a way, or just ridding our emotional, crap that we have, and it comes out through the music.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, for you, is there anything in particular, if you're comfortable, that you feel like? What are your demons that you've been able to make right, help make yourself right through music, through playing the blues?
Well, I mean, I've always been like the black sheep of the family. So I started to tour and play when I was 17 and just living on the bars. Hmm. I mean, there was a lot of alcohol going on and other stuff as well. And after a couple of years, when you go into being 30 years old and been doing that for a long time, it gets to you.
Yeah, man.
So I've had to work quite a lot with that part to stay sober and keep playing to be in the environment that it's a challenge for me to be in the environment and not have five beers before I play.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm totally open with that. And it's not a big thing for me. I have found out that I can do it.
Yeah.
I can play without, I mean, I didn't drink when I was a kid, so I started to play guitar before that. Hmm. So I just had to relearn the head a little bit.
Is stuff like NA or AA, do they have that over there? Alcoholics Anonymous or no, like programs like that? Is that like out in the open over in Sweden?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It is. It's the same, the worldwide movement of AA and all that. Yeah. I mean, I think it origins from southern states, right?
Yeah, I believe it was originated down in the south somewhere. Yeah, yes, I don't know where, but yes, it was somewhere down in the south.
Yeah,
I was curious how you know, it's interesting how the world has changed. Even when I started dating my wife, we've been together 25 years. And something like counseling or therapy, at least in England, which is a very conservative socially country, you know, people don't talk as freely. It's been my experience anyway. Maybe they do now, but all that stuff was very hush hush back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. You guys have always been, I think, very, what do you say, kind of open with, I have to see, like, you can hear, I have to see my therapist, or yeah. I have to go to the, and I think that is kind of natural.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
in my world.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got something fucked up about them, and you can't, it's just the way life is, you know, so you got to get some help sometimes, but having said that, we're open about that, but God forbid, you know, they try to show a set of boobs on television that. Then
yeah,
so it's you know,
contradicted
extremely. Whereas, you know, you go to France or like Asian countries, as you know, that it's very open there.
Oh yeah, boobs everywhere.
So it's really, I mean, it's very very strange how some of these things exist where, you know, one thing is okay, but another thing, and I don't even understand them. I know I just like do whatever I, you know, have to do to take care of myself. And I associate with people that, you know, sort of think in a similar way. But, yeah, it's kind of weird here. Certain things are very open. And,
yeah. It can be hard to get the head around some of the, you can be very, free and open with some things, and some things you cannot. And from Sweden, it can be like, okay, this is allowed, this is not allowed. You can buy a gun when you're 18. You cannot do that when you're 18. You can. It's very hard to get around some of the things. But of course, you take the rules. It's different. It's very different from state to state, I guess, as well. I mean, you have the states, they differ, I guess, in the states, a lot of the laws and stuff, right?
Some, not as much as it used to. Things are pretty much becoming more uniform here. You don't really have extreme, like, you know, the big thing is now like weed. So certain states sell weed, and in other states, it's only medical. And then even the new states, like when they, like I'm in Florida here, and they just passed that you could have medical weed, like, I don't know, a year ago. And when they first did it, it was really funny because it was like a very strict, like five or six things. And they were all pretty severe illnesses that you had to have. Now it's like a year later, and like on every corner, there's like a little sign, you know, marijuana doctors in here. And like, you can go in there and say, I can't sleep, or I'm just an anxious person, and they give you a prescription.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a much more, liberty.
It's much more relaxed and liberal, but apparently, when you go there, they don't give you a prescription to smoke weed. They give you a prescription for like a vape.
Okay.
So it's or edibles. I don't know. It's just some, you know, it's just really strange how things like, well, let's test it out. And I think it's all, to be honest, in my opinion, is everything is driven by money. You know, once they figure out how to make enough money to that everybody's going to be, you know, accept it, then they roll shit out. That's the way it seems to me. But, yeah, state by state, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, like guns and stuff is a federal, you know, government across the whole country and stuff like that. Programs like AA and NA, those exist all over the place. You know, and I've talked to a lot of musicians who've gotten sober, and it's funny. They say, hey, I always go to meetings now, even when I'm on tour, and they say, shit, I was always able to find the drug man. I certainly can find a meeting now. You know, which makes sense. You know, So you said you started playing at seven. How did you start getting into guitar originally?
Well, I got a acoustic guitar from my dad. It used to lie around in the house, so I started on that, and then I got a Christmas gift, I guess, in 1979 or 80. I think I was like 9, 10 years old when I got my first electric guitar. So it was like that.
Did your dad play guitar?
Yeah, just a little. He plays accordion.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Is that a common instrument in Sweden to play?
Yeah, it was like the people's instrument in the 50s.
Sure.
Everybody played accordion. So I grew up with that typical Swedish traditional music, like polkas, and it's a totally different style of music, but let's call it folk music then. I guess it's closer to your country music, I guess.
Yeah, it is, right? It definitely is. So you've been doing this a long time. What if you had to look back and give your younger self advice, what kind of advice would you have given yourself?
Maybe I'm pretty happy with things. It's not that, but if I knew how long time things can take, I should have played it a bit cooler. I've been working very hard. I mean, just when you work very hard for something, you can like overdo it, you know?
Yes, I do know.
So yeah, so maybe that part, when I wish that I could have enjoyed the surroundings a little bit more. When you're onto something, inside some mission, you don't see the surroundings, you don't see anything. You just have that picture in your head and the music, and so I missed out a lot of things, such as normal things I had to put aside. But I got a lot of things back through the music. Also, I mean, I have friends for life in music and stuff. So I'm pretty happy. You cannot have everything in life. You have to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I had to choose to be a good guitar player and practice a lot and stay disciplined and leave a lot of things out. And maybe I could gain that back when I have two kids of my own now. So I can relive a little bit of it, maybe.
How old are your kids?
My boy is 9 and my, no, 11, sorry, and my girl is 9.
Oh, that's good. Man, you got about 2 or 3 years of peace left with that girl. Trust me. At least that's how it works over here.
I think it's already started here. I mean, it's a nightmare some days.
It is, man. I have 3, and that my daughter was tougher than the two sons combined times 10, honestly. But she's 18 now, so we're through everything. She's great. It was a rough patch, man. Really, really difficult there.
Yeah,
it was very tough for me. Hopefully, it won't be as bad for you. Are you able to like enjoy the, you know, take a step back and smell the roses a little more today?
Yeah, a lot more actually.
Good.
When I've wind down a little bit, just because I just had to change some stuff just to it's different when you're 40 and not 20. You have to take it a little bit slower. So yeah, so now I can appreciate things around me a little bit more and just, you know, take it easy.
Yeah, no, it is tough. I didn't really start feeling like until I'm 54 now, and I've only started feeling recently. Like I'm sort of like that. Like if I have something to do, I'll stay up all night until it gets done. But I can't do that anymore. I just can't.
No, it's impossible.
I mean, I'd love to, you know. And the first few times it happened, I thought there was something wrong with me. I'm like, man, if I think about it out loud, it sounds stupid. Like I'd have 3 hours sleep and I go to the gym every morning. So I'm in the gym every morning. Then I work and then I have 3 hours sleep. And then I'm like, man, something's wrong with me. I don't feel good. Well, of course.
Yeah.
Because you think
life gets around. Life gets, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, well, I did this no problem 10 years ago. I'm like, well, I'm lucky I did it as long as I could, man, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk gear for a few minutes. What's your go-to guitar right now? You've got some real interesting-looking guitars that I've seen in the video.
There are some cool stuff. My number one is a Telecaster, a Fender Telecaster Deluxe with two humbuckers. And my next after that would be the Strat. I bought a new Strat. I have endorsement from Fender, so I have a good price. I bought I think it's called Special Strat, American Special Stratocaster, I think it's called. It's a rose, a red guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And my third guitar is my own signature model for Ibanez, which I made. We made 80 guitars through Ibanez.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah. It was like also a cool thing to be part of something like that. I got this scholarship or award from the Royal Music Academy here in Sweden back in 2012.
That's a big thing. That's a really big thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is for doing my homework and playing guitar. So through that, they got interested in my name at Ibanez, and they asked if I would like to be part of developing something. So I said yes to that, and they made 80 guitars, and I have 4 or 5 of them, which I play. But I play them when I play folk music and jazz. I don't play them so much with Kamchatka because they are a little bit softer. In some kind of way, I don't know. It's a little bit more bite in the humbuckers from the Telecaster Deluxe.
Are they hollow bodied, the Ibanez?
Yeah, it's like if you take a 335 Gibson and just shrink it.
Oh, okay. So, okay, great, man. If I come to Sweden, I want to see that guitar. That's really cool that you get your own signature model there, man.
Yeah, it's cool. But I mean, that contract is out now, and it was a limited run, but. Those who bought the guitar, they got a lot of guitar for a small amount of money, actually. So they should be happy.
So they got those on eBay every once in a while.
Yeah, they can show up. It was quite a while since I saw one out there, but yeah, one or two can show up sometimes, but it's very limited and rare.
That's great, man! Congratulations, that's a nice honor.
Thank you.
And your Telecaster, it just looks different when I've seen it. It doesn't, what, is there anything different about it? Like the body, it just looks different. Or maybe is it dark? So I can't see it. I don't know.
It's dark and I'm very small.
No, I thought it was different. Maybe I'm just not used to a guy playing blues, hard, heavy blues with a Tele. I wonder if that's it. And I just thought it was something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about it so much. Sometimes I've played on, maybe you've seen pictures with me playing SG, Gibson SG, maybe. Because I used to play SG when I toured with Clutch. I got to borrow a SG from Tim in Clutch. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
That's what I'm playing now. I really love my SG, man. It just sounds good. I got nice classic 57s in there. I really enjoy that.
That's just rock and roll.
It just feels good. It sounds good, no matter what you're playing. Any players who influence you that people might be surprised to hear?
Yeah, the obvious ones are, of course, Jimmy Vaughan, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eric Clapton, Derek Trucks, Albert King, B.B. King, Freddie King, all those greats, of course. Some Gary Moore also, and... there is one jazz guitar player here. He's dead now, unfortunately, in Sweden. His name was Rune Gustafsson. He was like the government-owned radio. He was the guitar player to call when they did all the music in the radio, and he was phenomenal. He played beautiful, and he's one of my real favorite. But I like Billy Gibbons. I like a lot, but that's also obvious, I think. Yeah. So it's not so many surprises, I guess.
Yeah. I was just curious who the off guys were. I was curious: is it easy to get lots of different guitars in Sweden, like Gibsons, Fenders? It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. These days, I mean, it was could be tougher, but that was before my time. I mean. Maybe in the 70s or in the 60s, it must have been tougher. But now, since the internet and all the big stores on eBay and everything, I mean, it's all united.
Gotcha. Desert Island Discs. If I asked you to pick your top three in no particular order, and knowing this can change tomorrow, what would be the first three albums that come to mind for now?
That would be John Mayall and the Bruce Breakers with Eric Clapton from 1966.
Beano.
That would, exactly.
It's a great album. Yeah, I love
that. Yeah, and the second one could be Steve Ray's first album, Texas Flood, because that was from when it came, 1983. It was so unsuspected, or what do you say, unpredicted.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was cool, and that was the first guitar hero that I could have. When I'm born in 75, so he was like the cool guy. But and also I would take a Swedish folk music jazz piano player, John Johansson, with the guitar player that I mentioned before, Rune Gustafsson. That would be my third choice. That's very soothing music.
Man, I love how you say those Swedish words. That's not a language we hear often here, and ever, actually. So it sounds like really cool, yeah, because you just never hear it.
No. Cool.
Yeah, we never hear it. Thomas, what's something that you've learned about yourself along this whole musical journey you've been on?
Well, there's a lot of music and life goes hand in hand. It's the same journey, I guess. I've learned a lot of things, met a lot of people, made a lot of touring. I've done the don'ts, I've done the do's. I've learned about myself that I've probably been working a little bit too hard in my head, I guess. So I burned my what do you say? I could self implode sometimes.
Burnout,
yeah. So but I've learned to handle that, just to take it a little bit easy. But it's tough when you're a rock and roller. I mean, it can get kind of rough sometimes, but I've learned my way. I found a way to survive all this and be a decent person and just, yeah, a good friend for those who needs a friend, you know?
Yeah, you're probably just super driven, it sounds like.
I think so.
Yeah, and that's tough. It's hard to turn that off, man. What do you know, because you feel like, oh my God, if you turn it off, you feel like, oh wow, I'm not giving 110%.
Yeah, and you feel bad for yourself, like, hey, I'm not trying hard enough.
Yeah, I know. I have a hard time with that. I really do. I struggle with that because I need to relax more, and it's always the struggle for me to do that. Last weekend, I'll just work on the weekends because my kids are older now. There's no little kids around anymore. So I told my wife, I said, they had a market out. It wasn't really the market. It was just a place to go to get out. The weather's beautiful now in Florida, right?
Yeah.
And I said, listen, let's get out of here. I got a ton of work to do, but if I don't, we're going to sit at the end of the day and I'm going to hate myself again. Another weekend that I didn't leave the house because I worked. And I went out and I had a great day. We just walked around. We had something to eat, some coffee, and it was just relaxing. So I'm learning how to do that myself. So I totally get that, man.
Sounds great, Craig, because I think you have to kind of learn how to balance. That's the trick when you're a driven person, to relearn how to balance so you get input and not only output, because it burns.
Yeah, yeah. And you think you could run, you think like, man, I got all the energy I need, but you know what? You really don't.
No, nobody.
Yeah, nobody. You got to have some downtime, man. And I came back that night and I worked for a couple hours, but it was like, I felt like I was alive that day, you know? And like you said, you only have so much time. And you know, you can make money, you can't make time.
Exactly.
So, tell me something, and I appreciate you being so straightforward on that. I really do. Tell me something about yourself people will be either surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Well, I love to play video games.
Cool.
On my PS4. I love that. That's my relaxing. just do that's a fantasy world and all that. And yeah, but I like to go to the movies these days. I didn't have time to do anything of that when I was a kid. I just played the guitar. So now I can appreciate stuff like that. But I have to be, when I get too far from the ocean, I get anxious, you know. I'm so used to having the shoreline and to see the horizon. That's my where I get my force, my stamina, my everything comes from the ocean. So I would sure like it down at your place
In Florida here by the ocean.
Yeah. I would fit right in, I can tell you.
Yeah, well, it's pretty laid back here. It's funny, there's been a lot of miniseries here that have taken place in Sweden.
Yeah.
Like cop, you know, shows. I can't think of the names, but I'm sure that you'd know them if I did. But and a lot of the scenes, you know, you see that all the stuff, you know, the vessels and the ocean in the backdrop, now that you mention it, I like that because I grew up in a city, so I never saw stuff like that. So I appreciate, you know, nature when I see stuff like that now. So I always admired that now that you mention it. Yeah. Really cool.
We don't have the big cities like you guys have in Sweden, of course. We are a lot of people like to go out in the nature. Mm. We are like, I think that's maybe a difference, it depends on which state we are talking about. Of course, I mean, you have big open spaces in the middle of the states of your country, but Swedish people, they like to go out in the nature and be by the ocean and in the forests. I think we have that close to. It's important to us.
I think that's actually much healthier, to be honest with you, to do that stuff. It just, you know, and especially I read articles all the time now. They're having stuff like tree therapy, and I don't know if it works or not, but I do know being out amongst the nature is a very relaxing, you know, thing, and that you can never, there's never anything bad to come of that, you know?
No, exactly. It's all good. It's all good.
Most important thing your dad taught you?
To do anything you want, but do it 100%. Then you can do whatever you want in your life. He grew up out on the ocean, so he didn't raise me in that perspective. But the lesson he taught me was, here's a guitar. If you can play it, if you know the tones, when I come back next week or next Saturday, then I'll give you a new lesson. And when you master this, I mean, just go grab it.
Hmm. So the guitar for you was also a very foundational connection with your dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's great.
It was. Yeah. It means so much. My whole upbringing, my whole bone structure, everything is around the guitar, I guess. Yeah, it's my connection to my father as well. He was in the house on Saturdays and Sundays, and every Sunday we visited my teacher. I had a private teacher, guitar teacher, and that was like every Sunday. First my sister 1 hour with her teacher, and then me with my teacher 1 hour, and then he went out at sea. So it has a very deep meaning to me, the guitar.
That's great, man. I'm glad. Did your sister play music now?
Yeah, she does, but not that much. She's a very awarded classical music on accordion. So so she's done that.
And your brother?
He starts to play guitar now, and he's 5 year old younger, so he's like 37, I guess he is. So he plays the blues now, and he asks me to teach him all the time, and I've given him a guitar, but we'll see.
Most important thing your mom taught you?
To forgive.
In what way?
in all ways. To forgive
yourself or others?
Everybody, yourself and others. Just be nice, forgive, and let go.
That's a great lesson, man. What do you think your strongest personal quality is?
That I'm, I think I'm kind of funny to be around. You should never say that about yourself, but yeah, people
great,
seem to enjoy. People seem to enjoy my company.
That's great.
I'm always positive and driven, and I never see a obstacle. It doesn't exist. It's just go get it, man.
That's awesome, man. You're also very direct and straightforward, which I love and appreciate immensely. I can't tell you how much.
Cool.
What's your favorite food in Sweden? And what, if you remember, what was your favorite food when you came to the States?
Well, my favorite food here is, of course, my mom's food. But that's that's like in every home, I guess. But Swedish meatballs with potatoes and I mean that's it's still very good.
I bet. And how about?
And, in the States, I mean, all the I'm a sucker for fast food. Also,
okay.
You have a lot of that. But the crayfish in New Orleans, I like that a lot.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. It was very very hot. The
spicy, you mean?
Spicy. Yeah. But they tasted very good, I think.
You know, it's funny. There's a store here. I'm sure you heard of it, called IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
So they're massive stores, man. They're like 40, 50, 60,000 square feet, right? And in each one of them, they have a little, well, I guess it's not really little. It's a kitchen, a cafeteria. And they pump out those Swedish meatballs, man. People eat them like they just discovered food, man. They just gobble those things up. Swedish meatballs.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess it's our biggest company on export, I guess, IKEA and Volvo, I guess, it's big as well.
Mm, that's funny. Yeah, but I bet you if you had those Swedish meatballs, you'd probably vomit. I'm sure they're awful what they're serving in IKEA versus what, like, your mom makes.
Yeah, it would be different, I guess. But, I mean, I eat anything, so I would chew them up as well.
Any hobbies or interests outside of music?
I mean, the family takes a lot of time now. At the moment, my son, he plays soccer, he plays handball, he plays indoor hockey. My daughter, she is learning how to play accordion. I tour quite a lot. So when I'm home, I want to stay home a little bit with my children as they grow up. But
sure.
I try to play some video game when I tuck them to bed, you know, and then I can play some grown up games, you know.
You mentioned earlier, I have a question that says, have you had a specific experience that changed your life or altered the way you think about things? I'm assuming it was the accident that you had a couple of years back.
Yeah, exactly. It was in 2017, February the 18th. When I don't tour or play or in the studio or something like that, I can go down to the harbor here in my hometown and find some extra hours for regular work, like loading ships and stuff, vessels. And I was on one of these ships, and then when you fit 40-foot containers together, you know. They secure each other on the ship, like with these big shoes, and those iron shoes they weigh about 5.5 kilos or something like that. So one of those fuckers, sorry, fell off from 7 meters and hit my head.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
So that's like a 12-pound iron weight coming down from about 18 feet.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was terrible. And it cracked the skull and broke like 5 or 6 bones around the right eye. And, I looked quite beat up. And, I mean, it was blood all over the place. It was very terrible. It was actually the hospital, what do you say, the nurse and the doctors, they said that, well, here's a lucky guy.
Wow. That's
still alive. That's why we haven't toured so much at all in 2017 and not in 2018, because I had to recover from this.
How are you feeling now?
I'm feeling okay. I have my neck, the neck is kind of twisted as well from this accident. And I had to relearn how to play the guitar again in 2017. I had to start all over because the left arm went totally numb.
Holy crap.
So I started with 1 minute and 2 minute and 3 minutes and 4 and 5. And then I just kept on. So now I'm up to, we're going to do the first Kamchatka show the 1st of June here in our hometown in a big venue. So that will be the comeback.
That's great, man. I'm really glad that you're able to come back. But do you have any lingering, like anything? You're just okay now, though, pretty much?
Yeah. I mean, my head is not the way it was before. I have a lot of empty space behind the right eye. There is like, I don't know the English word for where you have all these cavities, where you have all the canals.
The nasal, the sinus, the nasal.
Yeah, part. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's a lot bigger behind the right side. So I get a lot of headache and stuff from that. And tinnitus?
Yeah, tinnitus. Tinnitus.
Yeah. In the left ear. So
that's really that's annoying, that thing. I know some people have that. It's really it's a pain in the ass, that tinnitus.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass. It is, but I have to protect the left ear a lot more when I play these days. That's important, just so it don't screw up.
So you wear like plugs maybe, or earplugs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
So, but for all intents and purposes, it sounds like you'll be close to 100% as time marches on.
Yeah. In a year, I think I'm like 85 to 90% right now. And then
that's great.
One more year. Yeah.
That's fantastic, man. I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm very glad for that too, because there was a while there when I thought that I couldn't play the guitar again, and that was like not fun at all.
Yeah, it's like someone telling you can't breathe for someone like you.
Yeah, exactly. So, it was a journey. It's been a journey, like a long mental soul. What do you say? Search.
Yeah.
But now the music is flowing again. So I'm super happy.
Album number 7 is called Comeback.
Yeah. It should.
Yeah, man. Man, one more question. And I really appreciate your time. You're a wonderful guy. And you're a great guitarist who writes really amazing songs. And I appreciate every single thing you've put out. And I hope you continue doing that.
Thank you.
What's been the biggest change in your personality, Thomas, over the last 10 years? And how much of this change has been deliberate with you working on it, and how much is just a part of aging?
Well, the drinking part, that, I mean, it's so easy to say that it's your own fault and all that, but I grew up in an environment. I played the first show when I was 9 years old, so I've never known anything other than, hey, let's have a couple of 10 beers, you know. So that's been my normal. I didn't know anything about it. So it was just party on. So that part I have had to learn if I want to be a professional musician again, relearn that. But I think a small part of aging has to do with that as well, because you kind of wind down a little bit. That you take the edges off a little bit more when you get a little bit older, and then it kind of gets easier to work with yourself. I don't know. But I've learned a lot of done some things that I wish that I'd never done, but it's all in the human nature, yeah. I guess. We all have those
absolutely
things. Yeah. So I'm very happy. I think that I've been productive with having done all these albums and having raised two kids, and after the accident as well. I mean, I survived that one and have been fortunate to visit your beautiful country as well.
Thanks.
And I hope that I will come back and do that, so I can meet you and I can meet
absolutely,
a lot of
man.
Fans and our listeners as well. I mean, there are quite a lot of Kamchatka fans in the States as well.
That's really good to hear. That is really good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would, before I die, I would do, would love to do, before I would love to do at least one big tour for like 2 months in the States.
That'd be awesome, man. Well, you let me know and I'll be there.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, let me tell people where to find you. First of all, it's Thomas Junior Anderson. It's AnderSSON, and it's Junior JUNEOR. And the name of the band is Kamchatka. They're just on, if you like rock and roll, just please go listen to them. Honestly, they're one of my favorite bands. KAMCHATKA. And the album, man, who does your album covers? They're really like old school. You don't see like fucking cool record covers like this, man.
No, it's actually Per Wiberg who plays the bass as well. He is an artwork designer.
He does that?
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. Those are really cool.
Yeah, they are. They are beautiful in the vinyl format, you know. We have some posters and stuff as well. Like, yeah, he does some really tripping things.
And you know, it's really cool. Like the first three, actually the first four, you know, he cut the horizon. You know, and the first one, it was cut with the mountains, and the second one, it was cut with the ocean, the third one with the trees, and the fourth one is like kind of a desert, you know, or scruffy, you know, Western old shrubs. It really clever how he did that, and it was some not very continuity between, but you know, the styles are really cool, man. That's great. Really cool, man.
Yeah. I actually had that idea at the same time when I started with the whole idea with Kamchatka as well. I wanted to have everything like it's a long journey.
Yeah.
So people could feel that they were on the journey with the band.
Well,
sorry,
I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just enthusiastic. The search goes on. That's like searching down in the ocean, long road made of gold. Everything is, it's really cool. I like how you've done that. Good concept.
He's very, very talented. He does a lot of tour posters, and he gets a lot of job from other bands to do their cover art and all that stuff. He's great. He's great.
Awesome. You got something coming out with JP from Clutch soon, correct? And Malga, King Hobo.
Yeah, King Hobo. Yeah, we will. I hope that it will be released like. I saw the album cover made by Per again as well yesterday. I got it in the email. So I guess it's coming. And it will be released through Weathermaker, Clutch's own label. It will not be on CD. It will be only digital and vinyl.
That makes sense, man. No one's buying CDs anymore.
No. It's dying.
And you know what I heard? I don't know if this is true. I heard that Apple is stopping selling all downloads in 2019. I don't know if this is true, but it's going to be streaming. That's it.
Yeah, that's what people.
That's you're hearing the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, we have Spotify. It's a Swedish company, so everybody uses that.
Yeah. Okay. Same thing here. Everybody uses Spotify or Apple iTunes, except me. I just listen. I have all this music. I have to join the bandwagon sometime. And then you have something going on with, is there something else going on with JP besides King Hobo?
Well, you never know. You never know. There's always something cooking, you know. But now, I think we will focus on releasing three. We will record three new Kamchatka songs, and that will be released before this summer, before we start a tour in Europe this summer. And then in the fall, we will record a new studio album with Kamchatka. And what happens in between that, I don't know. There's a lot of things in the air.
Great. And then hopefully you have your own solo album with some acoustic work on there.
Yeah, I'm very tempted to kind of squeeze that in the between as well.
Well, awesome. Hopefully by the time that comes out, I'll figure out how to play music on this show. And you come back on, we'll sing, we'll play your stuff and let people get a little
taste. Yeah. Would be an honor.
Man, no, it'd be an honor for me. Thank you for everything. I can't thank you enough. You're a really, really awesome guy. And you sure you're not American, man? You're so out there. You're so direct.
Yeah. I think I've toured so many years, so I
you absorbed it.
Yeah, I absorbed it. Yeah.
All righty. Listen, thank you for everything. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks again to Thomas Jr. Anderson for spending time with us. Check him out online and at Kamchatka. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes along with some early product announcements. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So be nice, choose wisely, and go play your guitar. Have fun. Till next time, I'm out, everybody. Peace and love. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.